Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
In the 1933 novel, Lost Horizon, James Hilton created the mythical lost city of Shangri-La, a utopia whose citizens are almost immortal. The name has since become synonymous with the word paradise. So today there are Shangri-La hotels, Shangri-La restaurants, flower shops, spas, etc. All want to suggest that their particular service will deliver heavenly bliss. In this month's story, against her family's wishes, an aging matriarch decides to take a very expensive extended cruise on the Shangri-La of the Seas, an exclusive, specially designed ship that promises to take its invalid passengers to the ends of the earth and experience life to its fullest, to the very last moment, and beyond. Suspecting the Shangri-La Cruise Lines is a scam, the family enlists one of its members to find out what is truly going on. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Story 79, Shangri-La of the Seas. Somewhere and sometime you might discover a slogan that is more than just words.
Welcome to the fabulous Shangri-La of the Seas. Cruise to the last moment of your life and beyond in five-star luxury.
The automated call center attendant responded.
This is Daya Shan. I'd like to speak to my mother, Tanisha Shan, please.
Daya politely asked.
One moment, Miss Shan, while I try and make that connection for you.
The machine merrily responded, then flipped Daya over to a wait screen with a promotional she had already seen a dozen times. After the four-month mark, it seemed to be taking longer to get a connection to Tanisha. Her failing mother had insisted the family agree to her exorbitantly expensive world cruise. A last hurrah, Tanisha had argued. Her last opportunity to see places she had always dreamed of before she left this life. But Tanisha, on death's door when she had boarded the Shangri-La, had miraculously improved a few weeks into the cruise. Sensing a long wait, Daya leaned back in her chair and watched the promotional, mouthing the words.
Leave your cares, aches, and pains behind as you cruise to exotic locations with our world-leading assisted living medical technology that puts you at the center of every experience.
The announcer crooned over pictures of the Galapagos Islands, showing specially designed autonomous medical wheelchairs carrying a smiling group of fragile octogenarians along a sandy beach overflowing with seals. More pictures, this time of Greece, had swum past on the screen before the display froze, then switched to a distorted video of Daya's mother, Tanisha. Daya was shocked. She could barely recognize her mother. Instead of the 95-year-old desiccated body that had been transferred to the ship via a private ambulance, Tanisha was tanned, actually standing up by herself and looking better than she had in her 70s.
Hi, Daya. It's good to hear from you, dear.
Her image shuddered and jumped.
Bad connection. We're near the Strait of Magellan. They say the satellite coverage this far south is not that good.
Daya scrutinized the scene behind her mother. Several inflatable excursion boats were being assembled on deck.
Are you okay, Mom? How are you feeling? You're looking great.
There was an awkward pause that was just a bit too long before Tanisha responded.
Great. Yes, I'm great. It's the new onboard treatments. They make you feel fabulous. Maybe you should join the cruise too. You're not looking too good, you know.
It's too expensive.
Daya, take it out of my estate. I won't live forever, you know. You could join me. We'd have fun.
Mom, it's 70 plus. They're not going to let me on.
Daya didn't have the heart to tell her mother that her money had barely covered the first 8 weeks. When she had received power of attorney over her mother's affairs, just after the cruise ship had left port, she discovered that Tanisha's much-flaunted estate had been decimated in the last flash crash of the stock market, so she and the rest of the family were on the hook for the lion's share of the costs. And the costs were rapidly mounting.
Daya, guess what the good news is? There's a 6-month extension at half price. Can you imagine that? Everyone here has taken it, so I've signed up. Isn't that great?
Tanisha, oblivious to her daughter's growing consternation, excitedly continued.
So we won't be landing in Vancouver next month after all. Instead, we're stopping in Chile to take on a few new passengers and supplies. Then we're off to see the summer in Antarctic, then on to New Zealand and Australia. I've always wanted to see Ayers Rock.
Mom!
Daya began to object before the connection suddenly dropped, replaced by a plastic-looking avatar.
We pay you enough. Why can't you hire humans?
Daya cursed. The last few calls had been like this one, making Daya feel very uneasy. She hesitated, thinking. Then on an impulse, opened up a new window and did something she hadn't done in years. She called her uncle. Rennick's plane bounced once, then jammed on the thrust reversers, bringing it to an abrupt stop at the end of the short runway. The seat cushions relaxed, allowing his eight-decade-old frame to breathe again.
We have arrived at Presidente Carlos Ibáñez International Airport. Welcome to Punta Arenas, Chile's gateway to the Antarctic. Local time is 9:22 a.m.,
the automated steward announced. Rennick remembered when there were still human stewards, but Koss had eventually eliminated them, along with the check-in clerks, security, the pilots, whom were the first to go, and so now it was possible to board an airplane without dealing with a human at all. It gave Rennick the creeps, and possibly that was why he rarely traveled these days. But the flight was on schedule, so he had plenty of time to get to the dock. Rennick passed through immigration by simply waving his hand with the ID chip over the scanner and answering a few questions, then pressed a button, which he suspected was not random, to get a green light and clear customs with his bags. He exited the air terminal, which was a modest late 20th century affair, and approached a row of autocabs patiently waiting for the arriving tourists. A neon pink Great Wall Volex rolled forward out of the queue and opened its doors while the AI announced its rates in a smooth, semi-artificial voice. Rennick placed his bags in the back seat and directed the cab to take him to the port. The highway from the airport to the city proper wound along the barren coast, giving Rennick time to reflect. It had all been so rushed. Less than 3 days from his niece's first call, a family conference, and finally, the decision that someone needed to check up on Tanisha, his older half-sister. A world cruise from her deathbed to some extent made sense, given Tanisha's personality. But an Antarctic side tour, particularly since she had regained her health, well, they had all come to the same conclusion. It was not like her. Even if Tanisha could barely sit up, the old matriarch would have wanted to come back and retake control. There was also the financial burden the extension and its bundle of non-optional health services were placing on the extended family. Rennick stared out of the autocab's windscreen, watching the signs of a once prosperous region flow by. It's fitting, Rennick thought. At 81, he had seen better days too, and most of that time had been ostracized by the family. It was only his age that had brought the Shans to his doorstep. Other than Tanisha, Rennick was the only 70-plus member of the family. Ultimately, a bit of bribery had sufficed to put the bad blood behind him and take him on this unplanned family mission. As the son of his mother's third husband, Rennick, the half-brother, was never really accepted by the Shans. He didn't fit the mold. He was a musician, not an entrepreneur. Rennick had managed to scrape out a somewhat modest living composing music and selling it online, while his sister had founded a large software development company, the company the Shans now ran. He hadn't been too close to his half-sister, but found himself fascinated by her miraculous rebound, and had to secretly admit that he too was hoping that whatever they were doing on the Shangri-La might rub off on him as well. The autocab threaded its way through the narrow streets of the old Spanish town, then slowed as it entered the port, finally coming to a halt behind several ambulances crowding the front of a modest terminal building. Rennick paid the cab, pulled his bags out, then made his way to the terminal entrance, following two wheelchair-bound older women. Behind the terminal, the Shangri-La of the seas silently lay. It was a typical cruise ship, but much smaller than Rennick had imagined. In fact, it was rather unimpressive. Disappointed, he pushed through the doors into the check-in area, which was surprisingly full of wheelchairs and gurneys waiting to be processed. The travel agent had given the impression that there weren't many people getting on at Punta Arenas. But to Rennick, it looked like half a shipload. The unassisted boarding queue was empty, so he was able to walk up to the bored-looking agent and pose in front of the scanner while it checked his biometrics and pulled up his file.
"Good morning, Mr. Barra," the agent chirped without looking up. "I see that you're only with us for 2 nights, sir.
You're getting off at our last South American stop. That's unusual.
I'm just checking out the surface before I commit,
Rennet cautiously replied. The agent brightened and looked up from his screen.
Oh, you'll love it, sir. Everyone does. I'm confident you will decide to stay on. We've got several passengers who have been with us for years.
Years?
The agent ignored Rannick's question.
Here's your cabin assignment. You're in comfort class. That's deck 7, number 728. Pleasant journey, Mr. Barra.
Despite being the cheapest ticket, comfort class turned out to be surprisingly luxurious and surprisingly empty. As soon as he located his cabin, Rannick went in search of a steward. On the promenade deck, he finally spotted a uniformed hostess who was hurrying off on some errand.
Can you help me?
Rannick called out. The hostess stopped in mid-step and turned, giving Rannick a well-rehearsed canned smile.
How can I be of service, sir?
I need to contact a passenger in Utopian class.
Oh, that's easy, sir. Just use the flat screen in your cabin. You can contact anyone on the ship through it.
She's my half-sister. I'd like to see her in person so I can surprise her. She doesn't know I'm here.
The hostess stood smiling for a second, as if she didn't quite understand.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
She stopped to consult her tablet.
Mr. Barra, comfort class passengers are not allowed in Utopian areas.
Well, perhaps she could come and see me then.
Our Utopian class passengers rarely come down here, sir.
So can I be upgraded?
The hostess consulted her screen again.
I'm sorry, sir, but there's no vacancies in Utopian at the moment. Perhaps later in the trip a cabin will come up. I'll let you know.
The woman politely excused herself and walked away. If she meant that someone was getting off the ship at the next port, that wouldn't help, Rannick thought, and decided that he'd have to convince Tanisha to come and see him instead. Rannick turned on the flat screen embedded in the wall above the small desk in his cabin and scanned the menus until he found the ship's passenger directory, and from there Tanisha's name. He noted that there was no cabin number. His hand hovered over her name. He hadn't talked to his half-sister in years. The last time they were face-to-face, she had insulted him, claiming that he had wasted his life as a useless bohemian, writing little songs that rarely saw the light of day. And in return, he had accused her of having no empathy for the less fortunate who made the food, the clothes, and the material comforts she liked to flaunt. The argument had ended in agreement that they should never see each other again. Rannick hesitantly touched the screen, then waited while the words contacting Tanisha Shan flashed across the display. After what seemed a little too long, Tanisha's expectant face appeared on the screen, looking even healthier than he had remembered from the recordings Daya had shown him. She didn't immediately react, holding a smile that reminded him of the hostess for a second, before her face went through a quick succession of emotions. Surprise, anger, and finally, a defiant indifference.
Rannick, what an unpleasant surprise. I thought it might be Daya. You're the last person on the planet I would expect to call me. I'm shocked that you even have the money for a vid connection, and more, that you spent it on me.
Rannick carefully kept his emotions in check and calmly replied,
I'm not calling over the net. I'm here on the ship, in comfort class.
Tanisha smirked.
Couldn't afford anything more. Well, it suits you, Rannick.
Tanisha, let's put the past behind us for a bit.
Is Daya okay?
She's fine, but worried about you. That's why I'm here. Tanisha, they won't let me into Utopian class to see you. All I need to do is talk to you in person, make sure you're fine. Make sure you're not being coerced.
But you're talking to me now, Rannick. You can see that I'm more than fine,
Tanisha argued.
It would only take a few moments. You could meet me on the promenade deck. I wouldn't even be here if your family wasn't so concerned. They think you're acting odd. I just need a minute or two face to face, and that'll put everyone's mind at ease. Then you don't have to see me again. I'm getting off at the next port.
Tanisha briefly looked to the side as if someone was talking to her, then blankly stared into the camera for a moment before replying.
It's hard to... Well, it's just not done, Rannick. No one on this deck wants to be seen in comfort class.
Hesitation was something that was foreign to his half-sister. She had always been confident, decisive, and listened to no one. The way she was behaving now only fueled his suspicion, so he pressed the issue.
Tanisha, your family won't agree to the extended cruise unless we meet.
The connection suddenly ended, leaving Rannick staring at an empty screen. He commanded the directory agent to reconnect, but instead an avatar came on, politely informing him that Mrs. Shan was not accepting incoming calls at the moment. He gave it an hour, tried again, then gave up and went on deck to think. The next morning, while Rannick was standing in line for breakfast, he felt a light tap on the shoulder. At first he thought that Tanisha might have changed her mind, but as he swung around he found himself staring at the hostess he had talked to the day before.
"Mr. Barra, I have good news for you,"
she beamed, showing a brilliant mouthful of perfect teeth.
"You've been upgraded. A cabin came up in Utopian class."
"But," Rannick, caught off guard, stuttered, "I thought that there weren't any. I mean, we haven't docked. No one could have left the ship."
"You don't even need to go back to your room, Mr. Barra. As a courtesy, we've already moved your belongings. Follow me and I'll take you up. I can guarantee there's no lineup for breakfast there."
Suspiciously, Rannick followed the dark-haired hostess to the main elevator, which was already waiting for them when they arrived. Once inside and the door closed, the hostess placed her hand on a panel above the elevator controls and spoke into the air.
"Utopian level, please."
"Mako, I can see that you've brought our new guest with you," a disembodied voice answered.
"Yes, this is Rannick, Tanisha Shan's half-brother."
"Welcome, Mr. Barra, to Utopian class, where life exceeds all expectations." Rannick held back a jaded comment, then felt the elevator start to move. When the doors opened, he found that they were standing at the entry of an enclosed mall filled with tropical flowers and palms. Mako indicated that he should follow her. She introduced Rannick to a handsome young olive-skinned man in an impeccable styled suit. The man shook Rannick's hand.
"Pleasure to meet you, Mr. Barra. Anything that you need, just call on this."
He handed Rannick a small gold pendant.
"Pin that to your shirt and address it like this. Hello, client services. Then state your need, and one of our staff will be with you in less than a minute."
After being introduced to the rest of the staff, a neatly dressed steward took Rannick to his cabin, then showed him to a restaurant for breakfast, where he was immediately seated and served. Rannick looked around while he was waiting for his food to arrive, hoping to spot his sister, but apparently she wasn't there. The restaurant was on the top floor of the ship, with stunning views of the ocean framed by ceiling-to-floor windows in every direction. He was surprised how uncrowded the place was. More than three-quarters of the tables were empty. For that matter, he realized he hadn't seen many guests at all since he had arrived in Utopian class. Puzzled, he flagged down a passing waiter.
"Is this the only place for breakfast?"
Rannick politely inquired. Dressed in a blinding white semi-naval uniform, the waiter stopped and responded,
"There is a small coffee bar, sir, but this is the main restaurant."
"Did I miss breakfast or something? It seems pretty empty, given all the people that board it in Punta Arenas."
The waiter looked puzzled for a second, then checked something on his tray and smiled.
"Oh, I see that you've just arrived, sir. Most people in Utopian class prefer not to go out for meals."
The man made a respectful bow to excuse himself, then hurried off. After breakfast, Rannick wandered around until he found the coffee bar, then sat down at one of its small tables, ordered an espresso that he calculated would cost the family as much as an entire meal, and waited. Tanisha loved her coffee, so he assumed that sooner or later she would show up. But after an hour of watching the sea and the occasional guest roll by, Rannick turned his attention to the screen embedded in the top of the table. He touched its glass surface and looked for the guest directory, but there wasn't one. Then remembering the pendant, Rannick tentatively tried.
"Hello, client services. I'd like to contact another Utopian guest. Is there a directory so I can look them up?"
There was a long pause which made Rannick wonder if the thing was working. He was about to give up when a thin voice replied,
"All Utopian class guests value their privacy, Mr. Barra. So the Shangri-La Alliance does not provide contact information. However, you can leave a message just by telling me who you would like to contact."
Getting frustrated, Rannick growled back,
"Who else would I want to talk to? My sister, of course. Tanisha Shan."
I'm sorry, Mr. Barra. Mrs. Shan is busy at the moment. She says she will contact you in 2 hours.
Angry, feeling powerless, and not knowing what else to do, Rannick decided to explore the decks of the Utopian class. The whole area was done in a faux neoclassical style. Ornate plaster moldings, decorative panels, and gold trim seemed to cover every surface. He hated the look, but knew that to people like his half-sister it exuded the height of luxury and exclusivity. The thought only served to fuel his darkening mood. By the time he returned to the coffee bar, two things had struck him. First, there was almost no one around, and second, the entire Utopian class appeared to take up less than half the space on the upper decks. What was in the other half, he wondered. Rannick sat down in a leather chair that seemed to fold in around him, ordered a decaf espresso, then waited for Tanisha to arrive. After 15 minutes, a steward carrying a tablet approached him. Mr. Barra, he announced rather than questioned, this is for you. He leaned in and handed the tablet to Rannick, then turned and left without an explanation. Rannick watched him walk briskly away. The tablet screen suddenly flashed to life, Tanisha's face appeared, and the clipped sound of a microphone battling a heavy wind burst in.
Rannick, I've decided to take a last-minute excursion, so I won't be meeting with you.
Rannick turned his attention to his sister's image on the small screen. The wind was whipping her gray hair, and water ran down her cheeks. Behind her, other elderly guests, in bright orange survival suits, clung to the side of a bouncing Zodiac.
We're whale watching. Isn't this great?
You're not fooling me, Tanisha. Where are you, really? We're between two ports, and the ship hasn't stopped. How could they have launched Zodiacs?
Rannick, they have everything. By helicopter, of course.
She defensively suggested.
There's no helipad on this ship. Where is here? We're not even close to the coast.
Confusion suddenly ran across Tanisha's face, then the connection broke and the screen went blank. Rannick threw the tablet down, cracking the screen, and spoke into his pendant.
Okay, hello, guest services. Look, unless my sister comes to this cafe in 10 minutes, I'll contact my family and advise them to stop payment.
He leaned back in his chair and waited to see what would happen. It took only a minute before three muscular-looking stewards appeared.
You must come with us, Mr. Barra, the biggest one demanded. I was expecting you. What took you so long?
Rannick held up his hands in a mock surrender, then got up and was escorted to the administration offices, where he was deposited in a small, windowless meeting room. They kept him waiting for an hour before a nondescript 40-something man in an expensive black business suit arrived and sat down at the opposite end of the table without introducing himself.
I understand that you and your family are concerned about Tanisha. Let me assure you that she is receiving the best we can offer. There's no need to worry. Where's my sister, Mr. What should I call you? Let's just keep this casual, Mr. Barra. You can call me Indira. I'm the Senior Director of Guest Relations. My job is to make sure that the Shangri-La Cruise Lines exceeds all our guests' expectations, and let me assure you, we always do. Cruise to the last moment of life and beyond in 5-star luxury. We live up to every last word in our motto, for every guest. Now, about Tanisha. Does she appear to be unhappy or unhealthy, Mr. Barra? That's not the point, and you know it, Rannick accused. Without physically meeting her, how can we know that she's not being coerced, taken advantage of, or manipulated? Your services are very expensive, even for a family like the Shans. I'm here to see her so I can assure the family that she's making rational choices of her own free will. And if I can't... Indira cut him off. You'll tell your family to stop paying. And that would be very unfortunate, Mr. Barra, for your sister's well-being.
Are you making a threat?
Rannick shot back. No, Mr. Barra, I'm just stating the facts. If payments stop, your sister's upgrades will too. That's our policy. Simple.
I need to see her,
Rannick insisted.
And the more you evade my requests, the closer I'm getting to pulling the plug on whatever kind of money-sucking scam this is.
Indira glanced at a handheld he had in his lap.
I can tell that you're not going to let this go, are you, Mr. Barra? Well, it's against corporate policy, and amounts to an invasion of our guest's privacy, which we zealously protect. But let's go visit your half-sister, and perhaps after you see her, you'll understand. Change your mind and do what's best for her.
Indira whispered into his collar, and the three brawny stewards reappeared.
They escorted Rannoch to the end of a small hallway that led away from the central mall. Indira nodded to the closest steward, who placed his hand on the wall beside a row of bas-relief Greek-inspired figures. A hidden panel slid back, revealing a door simply labeled Long-Term Storage. The space beyond was cold and bathed in dim green light. It took Rannoch's eyes a few moments to adjust before he could make out details. They had entered a large multi-storied chamber, stuffed full with row on row of matte black cylinders.
S-0095,
Indira spoke into the frigid air. Rannoch shivered, wrapping his arms around his chest.
This will only take a minute, Mr. Barra,
Indira assured. Somewhere off in the shadows, the noise of clunking gears and well-oiled chains echoed. Then a few seconds later, Rannoch could make out a squat robotic gurney loaded with one of the cylinders approach. It came to a halt in front of the group. Indira touched a button on the control panel mounted to the side of the cylinder, which caused a small panel to slide open, revealing a glass portal.
If you please, Mr. Barra, take a look.
A mixture of dread and anger surged through Rannoch as he leaned over and saw Tanisha's wrinkled face. Apparently asleep, or dead, he couldn't tell which.
You,
he began to accuse before Indira cut him off.
She died as predicted by her medical caregivers 4 months after joining us. But like all our guests in Utopian class, she opted to upgrade before she physically expired.
Rannoch began to reach for his phone, when a meaty hand restrained him.
Please listen first, Mr. Barra. Then you can make your call if you want. She asked for our ultimate upgrade. Transference to a von Neumann class singularity.
I don't understand.
Well, most people would not, Mr. Barra. To put it simply, we've moved all your sister's memories, her thought patterns, the things that make her, well, her, into our AI network. This spared her from experiencing her physical death. And we've gradually improved her health. All very natural, you see. From her perspective, she never died. Don't you see? It's the last part of her slogan. Cruise life to the last moment and beyond. We guarantee it. Particularly the beyond part.
You've converted my sister's mind into an avatar that lives in the CAN VR?
Rannoch spat out in disgust.
Mr. Barra, it's nothing as crude as that. At each port, we send out micro-drones to capture the current external environment. Our guests can go on an excursion and ride along in real time. If we offer a Zodiac tour to some remote island, it's a live feed, so each experience is real and never the same. The environment is constantly changing as new data is fed in. Our guests aren't cut off from the world. They can contact their loved ones anytime they choose. Someone like you, for example, could even keep posting new songs to the internet. As long as you pay our quite reasonable fees, you can live for decades beyond your physical body. Most of our guests plan for this and have invested wisely. I was so shocked to hear about your sister's estate.
How do you know about that?
Rannoch accused.
We thoroughly research our guests, Mr. Barra. For example, you're 81, almost 82, and you have the beginnings of an inoperable aneurysm.
Rannoch stared in disbelief. We scan every guest as they enter the Utopian deck to do an ETD, estimated time of death. The service is part of the package. It lets us know when to approach a guest with the ultimate upgrade offer.
To have your mind sucked into a machine,
Rannoch cynically noted. Indira ignored the slight.
We estimate that you have about 3 years. It's a little too soon for someone like you to be cruising on the Shangri-La. But we'd like to make you an offer, Mr. Barra, that you cannot refuse.
Rannoch stretched his legs out in the back of the big limo as it made its way from the port city of Valparaiso to Santiago. An actual human, rather than an AI, steered the monstrous vehicle.
This is first class all the way,
Rannoch whispered to himself, and the Shangri-La lines were footing the whole bill. He itched instinctively at the spot on his neck where they had inserted the health monitor, feeling a small lump under his skin. The device would notify them when the aneurysm was ready to burst. Then they would fly him to their closest ship. All expenses paid.
25 more years. Free. Not bad, he marveled, then reached into his pocket for his phone.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Stories 79, Shangri-La of the Seas. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on iTunes, or on Stitcher Radio, or check us out in Google+ or Facebook. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com, or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. A new story is released every month, between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's story was written and read by Alan B. Hare. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David Hume. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you're free to share our stories, just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.